We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, July 9th, and President Biden is saying that he is staying in the race for 2024. He sent a letter to his party on Capitol Hill yesterday to Congress and has basically, in my view, tempted God because he's saying that only God Almighty can move me. Well, sometimes if you tempt God, God does answer back, and that is very dangerous territory, in my view. He also came out against a bill requiring proof of citizenship in order to vote. This comes from the Daily Caller. Democrats are against a House Republican-sponsored bill requiring voters to prove they're U.S. citizens before casting a ballot. A Republican Texas Representative Chip Roy introduced the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act, to protect U.S. elections from the millions of illegal immigrants flooding our border every year under the Biden administration. So Representative Chip Roy joins us now. Good morning.
How are you, Jenna?
You know, I'm good. I'm just actually, I can't believe that Democrats are willing to say that they're against this bill that you sponsored. I mean, it is beyond pathetic that this one thing of just saying that, yeah, illegals can't vote in our elections, that can't even be bipartisan.
Well, I just got to call you out there. Of course you can believe it. So can I. And so can a lot of Americans. Democrats, notoriously, would put their own political power and, frankly, their worldview that there is no real benefit to sovereignty. They don't believe in America as a thing. They don't believe in American exceptionalism. They don't want to protect what it means to be an American citizen. They kind of want a one world, new order, if you will. That's why they're fine with open borders. That's why they want to fund the United Nations to the hilt. That's why they want to subject us to international organizations. This is just another piece of that. And they want to be able to try to grab these people and to win electorally with their votes in order to continue to perpetuate their agenda. That's what this is about. Our bill is simple. You should be a citizen to vote. 85% or so of Americans believe that. It's already federal law, but federal law currently also has been interpreted to prohibit states from actually checking citizenship. So what good is it? So our bill would fix that and go one step further, which is to say for federal elections only, because, you know, we believe in federalism, that in federal elections, you'll be required as a state to check citizenship or registration for federal elections. We just think that's important for the Senate, the House, and the presidency. We should all be playing by the same rules. Pretty straightforward.
That is very straightforward. And yet Democrats are coming out against this. What is their rationale? I mean, are they still using this whole ridiculous, oh, this will disenfranchise voters? And yeah, I mean, I'm fine with illegal aliens being disenfranchised. They should be. They're not allowed to vote in elections. So, I mean, what is even their messaging to their base? Because, of course, they're not going to admit everything that you just said, that it is clearly their worldview and agenda.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. They will try to say, I think unsuccessfully, but they will try to scare voters, minority voters, and other voters, that this, quote, disenfranchisement that you just referred to would mean them, even as American citizens. They say it'll be too much of a burden for people to show up and provide and demonstrate citizenship. Look, we've crafted this bill to comport with what the courts have upheld in the past for states to require as the documentary evidence. We make it fairly simple. We make it prospective. There is a requirement that states need to clean up their voter rolls, which would then retroactively, you know, fix the system. But for new registrants, it would require it going forward, and then it requires the fix of the system. You show up with a passport. You show up with a real ID that already checks citizenship. If you don't have those things, you show up with your regular driver's license, photo ID, and a certified birth certificate. If you don't have that, we have some other mechanisms and paths, just like everything else, right? If you want to go sign up for TSA PreCheck, if you want to go sign up, if you want to get your passport, if you want to go do other things, it's the same thing. We make it as minimally burdensome as possible. We want to preserve and protect people's right to vote, but we want to fix the system so that you can believe in it. Nothing more, nothing less. They're hiding behind it because they don't like the policy. That's the actual truth.
I'm speaking with Representative Chip Roy from the great state of Texas, and it is really just genuinely unbelievable that any mechanism that preserves election integrity that the Democrats are suggesting is too burdensome, and you know this the poor minorities that can't go out and figure out how to get an ID and a passport and can't find their birth certificate. I mean, this is the same rhetoric when they were saying, you know, that Black people can't hire lawyers. I mean, I remember, you know, all of these things that Democrats are actually I think being very disrespectful to their very own constituents who are smart enough to manage the real world. And of course, we need guardrails around election concerns. And election integrity for a lot of conservatives is very high on the priority list. I mean, of course, the economy, the border, you know, so these other things are very important. And now pro-life has become a very big issue as well coming out of yesterday. I want to ask you about that. But it seems like the Democrats want absolutely no guardrails, and then just to have everyone assume, but, you know, trust us, bro, we're going to be fine with our elections when we're telling our election officials, don't check anybody's ID, just trust that only the good people will come and vote, and all of the people who actually don't qualify, they're going to somehow magically just stay out of the election. I mean, it's absurd.
No, you're right, and you're a lawyer, and you understand what the courts have done with respect to, you know, the phrase undue burden, or what they've done in sort of defining what is a burden from a constitutional right. Right. In this case, we're talking about voting, and Democrats are going to try to exploit that to exploit fear. That's what they do. Instead of coming together and saying we have a national problem, we need to make sure people believe in the integrity of elections. Yes, the vast majority of people who vote are citizens. Yes, the total number of people who vote who are non-citizens isn't huge, but it is very significant, and it is growing, and it is growing because our borders are open. And we've got documented proof that it has occurred. Instead of being rational about that and then saying, yeah, let's create a system, make sure that citizens are only are voting, let's make it as minimally burdensome as possible for the citizen. They don't view it that way because they're viewing this as a political cudgel. They want to sow division. They want to foster racial division and animosity. That's their playbook. They failed at the class division because our overall capitalistic system and prosperity and growth and freedom lifted all boats. So they've been for 50 years using race as the ultimate division tool. And they're going to continue to do so, and they will do so here.
And let's all remember that it is only the Christian biblical worldview that treats everyone genuinely as equal, because we are all human beings made in the image of God and have inherent dignity and worth. Every other worldview, including the leftist, liberal, Marxist view, has all of these different hierarchies that lead to racism, sexism, and all of the isms. And it is a very good thing in the United States to ensure that we have our laws that are predicated on on a biblical worldview, and we do have those guardrails that preserve election integrity. But, you know, President Biden is coming out against this bill, which is, you know, really no surprise. And with the letter that he sent to Capitol Hill saying that he's staying in the race for 2024, Representative Chipper, you have come out with a resolution that is urging the vice president and the majority members of the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment. You and I have talked about, you know, the possibility, and I'd love your thoughts on this, of legislating further according to the 25th Amendment and designating some other body, if, because the vice president clearly is not going to do this. But the bottom line is that the Democrats and especially the White House staff around Biden have been lying to us for who knows how long about Biden's health. So where is the conversation in Congress right now among Republicans and then also your Democrat colleagues?
Well, look, I mean, this is a really important question. People ask it, you know, well, Chip, why would you do this? Why would you want to push the 25th Amendment? Doesn't that undermine President Trump in the November election? I say, hold on a second. Number one, Congress can't do anything to kick this off and trigger the 25th Amendment. Only the vice president can. We recognize Democrat, and to your point, right, should we change that going forward? There's no way we're going to change that right now. But it is a legitimate question whether we should change it to where some committee makes the determination, because obviously the vice president and the cabinet are somewhat beholden to the sitting president. But okay, our current 25th Amendment says the vice president kicks it off. All I did was file a resolution saying she should. Why? He holds the nuclear codes. He's the commander in chief. He's clearly 100% undebatably so not there. He is not all there. We all know it. Those of us who have known it a little longer, it was harder to prove. They proved it to the entire world, unfortunately, 2 weeks ago. So we believe, or at least certainly I do, that it's important to make that case clear. Democrats are the ones that are going to have to decide this. All we can do is stand for what is right and what is good. That means a commander-in-chief who's actually coherent. The politics will follow from that, in my opinion. And importantly, remember, they're in a box of their own creating. I said on Fox yesterday that they're in a box in which they've got to choose between an incompetent president, mentally incompetent president, and a vice president who was very obviously a DEI hire. Now, I got, you know, criticized yesterday by the radical left and the progressives out there saying Chip Roy making a, you know, a racist statement saying it's a DEI thing. Hold on a second. Do you remember when Joe Biden said months before, I think in the summer of 2019, that he was going to choose not just a female, but a minority female? I don't even think he said female. I think he said someone of the other gender, some nonsense like that. But he was going to choose a female, other gender, of a different race. I'm almost certain that was exactly what Joe Biden said. That is the definition, a month out, of saying you are going to narrow the field to a very tiny subset of the American people. You didn't say I'll hire the best candidate regardless of sex, best candidate regardless of race. You and I believe that, and Americans believe that for the most part. He didn't do that. So it was definitively a DEI choice, and now they're in a box. They know that she's not very popular, so they're stuck. And I just think we ought to always stand on the side of righteousness, which is a president who is competent, and then let them sort out how they're going to manage it through the next few months.
I think that's so well said, and that is incumbent upon not just conservatives, but especially Christians, to always stand for righteousness, what is true, and what is right. And so, speaking of that, what is your response to what came out of the RNC yesterday with weakening the platform on both abortion and same-sex marriage? I was very discouraged to see that.
So, you know, I've seen a lot of the reporting about it. I've not had time to study the full platform. That's not a punt, Jenna. You know, I'm not afraid to comment on what's in front of me, but I do like to see it in full. I was working on the SAVE Act all day yesterday. I was in Rules Committee all day yesterday. I'm going to study that today. I have a quick reaction, which is, look, there were some good things in the platform in its simplified version. I've worked on platform committees, so, you know, I like to say positive things where I should. I am glad that there was one element of what I think they had in the abortion language about the 14th Amendment, the recognition that the 14th Amendment can stand for the proposition that you protect life, preborn life. I think that's actually an important point that we've never as specifically said. But it did then kind of walk back the language on marriage. But I need to go study it before I comment fully. Again, not a pun. I just want to read it in its entirety first. So,
which is totally, that is fair. Absolutely. I wish that more people actually read things before commenting on them and, you know, especially the left. So anyone listening from MSNBC, I'm talking to you. But yes, I think that's a totally fair comment, Representative Chip Roy. And just real quickly in the last 30 seconds, how can listeners support the SAVE Act and what should they tell their members of Congress?
Oh, yeah, look, please just call your members of Congress, you know, politely but firmly over the next 24 hours. We should vote on it tomorrow on the floor. And just say that, look, it's simple. I believe that only citizens should vote. I believe we should have legislation that requires it. We believe the SAVE Act's important. Make sure you vote for it. Hopefully every Republican will vote for it. You know, I think there might be a couple who are still concerned about federalism. And look, and I understand that instinct very much so. We've been working to kind of educate everybody about why it's constitutionally sound, still respects federalism. So call your members of Congress, say you want citizens only to vote, and the SAVE Act is important to get it done.
Thanks so much. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we're continuing to talk about all of these different headlines from Joe Biden, his mental inabilities, to the breaking news yesterday that was, I think, shocking to a lot of evangelicals and Christian conservatives, that the RNC platform has changed. And I would encourage you to read the 2016 platform statement and then the new 2024 platform statement, because the 2016 RNC platform said this: the Constitution's guarantee that no one can, quote, be deprived of life, liberty, or property deliberately echoes the Declaration of Independence's proclamation that all are endowed by their Creator with the inalienable right to life. Accordingly, we assert the sanctity of human life and affirm that the unborn child has a fundamental right to life which cannot be infringed. We support a human life amendment to the Constitution and legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to children before birth. We oppose the use of public funds to perform or promote abortion or to fund organizations like Planned Parenthood. And it goes on to say, we urge Congress and the states to make it a crime to acquire, transfer, or sell fetal tissue for elective abortion research. And we will not fund or subsidize health care that includes abortion coverage. So that was from 2016, a very clear statement. And the full passage now in the new draft RNC platform on abortion only reads this: we proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting those rights. After 51 years, because of us, that power has been given to the states and to a vote of the people. We will oppose late-term abortion while supporting mothers and policies that advance prenatal care, access to birth control, and IVF fertility treatments. That's it. So it's very watered down and specifically only saying the states. So joining me now to talk about this and a lot more is Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin. So good morning, Representative Tiffany. And I know there's a lot to discuss about the first week in Congress, but I want to get your reaction to the RNC's platform, because this is clearly watered down language on what was previously a very firm pro-life stand. And in 2016, I mean, I'm old enough to remember that those of us who tentatively supported Donald Trump when he got the nomination, he was very clear on pro-life, and we weren't sure what he was going to do about it, if anything. And it eventually led to the overturning of Roe versus Wade through his judicial appointments on the Supreme Court. We're all very happy about that. But now in 2024, he seems to be leading the party in a very different direction and running away from the incredible generational victory that was the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Good morning, Jenna. It's good to join you. And as someone who believes life does begin at conception, it is evident that we have a lot of work to be done yet. And as I look back in retrospect to the Dobbs decision and what a great victory it was, I mean, first of all, for constitutional law in the United States of America, right? I mean, that was a great moment. But this effort, this fight to protect life will go on as long as we are on this earth. And I think that's I think for many people, they thought, okay, we have won the battle, we can move on. We found out that the left, including, so every member of Congress in the last session of Congress on the Democrat side, they voted for abortion all the way up till birth. And that tells you everything you need to know about how this is going to be an ongoing effort on our part, and we need to be unwavering. We need to continue to fight for life and win battles in any way that we can as we go forward.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. And the pro-life stance has always been to not just make abortion illegal, but to make it unthinkable. And the way that we do that, of course, is changing hearts and minds. But our law also has to reflect the truth about morality and a measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil. And the Democrats, frankly, vote evil quite a lot. And a lot of people on the leftist media want to ignore the fact that Democrats support abortion all the way until the moment of birth, some even after birth. And, you know, the mom can decide, do I want to keep my baby or not? I mean, it's horrific. And the pro-life stance has never been, well, let's overturn Roe versus Wade and then yay, we're done. And if the blue states and, you know, California, Colorado, New York, you know, want to have a partial birth abortion, then we're fine with that as long as the states and the voters decide. And that yet seems to now be the rhetoric from the RNC platform. And so as a Republican, how do you see the conference moving in a direction that is still championing pro-life, and specifically on the federal level and then also in the individual states, with this type of watered-down platform?
So we're working every day here in the House of Representatives to make sure that the Hyde Amendment provisions are included in any federal legislation. So in other words, you know, the Hyde Amendment being that taxpayers shall not have to fund abortion. So we're very consistent about that. We also have the Born Alive protections. I believe that was authored by Representative Scalise. That has been something that we've put forth at the start of each session that I've been in Congress, and we are continuing to do that. So we are continuing to fight for life. I just think we kind of got caught flat-footed, Jenna, with the Dobbs decision and weren't fully prepared for what was about to happen when the left took the abortion issue. And I think about our state of Wisconsin, we lost our state Supreme Court on this issue because we simply weren't ready. I think we are, I think we're getting in a better spot now to message this properly to the American people and to be able to notch some victories, whereas we've had some really significant losses here over the last couple of years. You know, you think about the statewide referendums in Ohio and Kansas. So to me, it's a classic case of, you know, a lie goes halfway around the world before the truth puts its sneakers on. And we are playing catch up, and we need to continue to work to spread that pro-life message, because at the end of the day, it is a winning message.
Yeah, I'm sitting with Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin, and I couldn't agree with you more that that Republicans and pro-lifers and conservatives were caught very flat-footed, because I think that although we have for my entire lifetime been pushing for the overturn of Roe versus Wade so that the battle could be at the states and in Congress, we somehow didn't really think that we were ever going to see that day. So then when it happened, we weren't really prepared and organized in a lot of the states. And so your fellow colleague, Congressman Bob Good, who's the current chair of the Freedom Caucus, has been pushing even since the Dobbs decision came out, and pointed out to me on this show that the Dobbs opinion said that the issue is now returned to the people and their elected representatives, which does include Congress. And so there's been this very wide debate on whether Congress should legislate to at least enact, you know, some type of abortion restriction, and it has become a huge talking point for Republicans saying, well, if we even go down that road, we're going to lose the elections. I mean, my view as a Christian and as a conservative and a pro-lifer is, well, if we are watering down our message and we're too afraid to actually utilize the powers that the Constitution provides, then what good is actually being in office and winning elections? And so do you think that we need to message that better and at least push for some like a heartbeat bill or, you know, as Senator Lindsey Graham says, you know, 15 or 16 weeks or at least something that there is consensus on the federal level, and then states can restrict abortion even beyond that?
Yeah, so, I mean, for those of us that have such a great respect for former Justice Scalia, I mean, this was the approach he took, is that it is a state issue in regards to abortion. And whether you agree with him or not, he's one of the great thinkers of this period. I think about in the state legislature when I was there, it was about 7 years ago, we voted on a 20-week bill in anticipation. Will the day ever come when Roe versus Wade will be overturned? And of course, that day came. And so there is that bulwark in place in the state of Wisconsin as a result of it. Now, is 20 weeks the ideal amount of time? That certainly can be debated, and I'm not going to sit here and say that that was perfect. But it was better that we did that than having nothing at all. And I think that is some of the discussion that we should have in regards to the federal law, Jenna, is there a particular point in time, like you're talking about, a heartbeat bill that would be appropriate to be able to save as many lives as possible, because that's ultimately what we should be attempting to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who are pro-lifers that say, well, anything short of saying, you know, zero abortions under any circumstances because life begins at conception are missing the point that at least, I mean, I'm in favor of a heartbeat bill or at least 16 weeks and 20 weeks other than, you know, rather than what my former home state of Colorado has, abortion all the way until the moment of birth that's legalized. I mean, that so there are so many lives that can be saved the greater the restriction. And so at least Wisconsin put that provision in. So I agree with you. And I think we do need to have these conversations. We shouldn't shy away from them because one of the things that the Dobbs opinion gave us is the ability to argue the pro-life stance on the merits, where previously Democrats and those who were very advocates for pro-abortion and state-funded abortion on demand and all of those things would just invoke Roe and say, well, and shut down the conversation and say, well, we can't even debate it because that's super precedent, the law of the land, all of that. So we do need to get better at our rhetoric and actually having those conversations. But in just the last few minutes I have with you, Representative Tiffany, and I so appreciate you joining again. I wanted to get your opinion as well on what's going on with Joe Biden and the conversations that you're having in Congress and among your Democrat colleagues as well, who are very sincerely and rightly concerned that he is unable to just to discharge his duties. I'm disappointed to see that the Democrats are only looking at November. What about the next 7 months when we have someone who's clearly incompetent, still ostensibly in control of the executive branch?
I think you're driving at the correct point here, Jenna, in that what about us, the American people? Rather than just talking about your power and the next election, what about the American people who are suffering with the inflation, the illegal immigration that's killing thousands of Americans, whether it's child trafficking, fentanyl deaths, and you know, just all those things that are going on in America? They're just thinking about how do we hold on to power rather than how are you going to use that power, because you've used it very inappropriately over the last 4 years, and you've propped up this person who clearly was not capable of being a active president, and we knew that, and we warned the American public about that all the way back to when he was in his bunker campaigning in 2020. Bunker, of course, equaling his basement. And so I kind of chuckled as I left the Capitol yesterday after voting on our votes. We cast our votes last night, and very few of us Republicans were sought out for interviews. It was all the Democrats, and it's the classic parlor game, as you know, Jenna, out here in Washington, D.C., where the press scurries around for the latest story. And, you know, I guess that's what you do. But what about the American people? What about the American people? And that's where we have this great opportunity as Republicans.
Yeah, just standing for the truth. And I really appreciate your time, Representative Tom Tiffany. We'd love to have you on again soon. We'll take a break here and be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Talking about the RNC changing their platform yesterday in this secret meeting that has watered down the language on pro-life and on same-sex marriage. And it is my firm belief that Christians, and especially Christians, but also conservatives, need to take a very solid stance and say, no, that is not okay with us. And if we're sitting here and saying, well, it's just a binary choice and Republicans are always better than Democrats, I mean, what are you going to do? Just say that you're going to vote for the Democrat then all we're suggesting is that every Republican or anyone who says that they're running on a conservative ticket has to be just a little bit to the right of the most radical extreme leftist or of their particular general election opponent for us to be willing to support them. And where does that go? Everything we know from scripture, everything will rapidly devolve into debauchery and degeneracy unless we specifically intend to put God at the forefront. We have to take a firm stand for biblical truth and to say, no, this is not okay. And some of the nation's top religious liberty leaders are actually very concerned about this and are suggesting that they're not going to start now voting for any candidate that is not specifically pro-life and willing to take a stand on the traditional family and the biblical definition of gender, human sexuality, marriage, all of these things. And so my good friend Meg Basham from the Daily Wire tweeted this: GOP leaders, Mike Stone is a well-known influential pastor and the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. He is known for being a rock-ribbed conservative, both theologically and politically. He's not the only pastor and ministry leader saying this. You need to think very hard about how many of this kind of evangelical voter you can lose and still win the election. Mike Stone saying, I've repeatedly stated for years that I wouldn't vote for any politician who supports killing unborn children, not even a dog catcher. I have zero intention to start in 2024. So my good friend Steve Dace, host of The Steve Dace Show on The Blaze, joins me now. And Steve, I'm ready for your epic rant on this.
I think, you know, let's switch this up. And actually, I want to look at this strategically because you and I are a couple of the few evangelicals with platforms of significance that actually have worked at high levels on campaigns and have done the nuts and bolts of politics other than just pontificating on it. And so I want to give our audience a perspective that they aren't going to hear in other places. Lots of people will do great homiletics on this and exegesis on this, like Mike Stone you just mentioned, and we'll discuss it from a principled theological perspective, which I want to make sure I stress is the most important for believers, okay? But we have an opportunity here to discuss this in a nuts and bolts way to try to give our audiences an opportunity to see what's going on inside the smoke-filled rooms. And I will just tell you, this strategy has no chance to work. Okay, it's been tried numerous times by John McCain, by Mitt Romney. None of them had the force of will of the persona of Donald Trump, and were not nearly as popular with the base, so it didn't get as far, even though behind the scenes, this is always what they wanted to do. Roger Stone, one of Trump's closest confidants, he and his former wife, Ann Stone, I mean, for 30 years, went to the Republican platform meeting at the convention and tried to get the abortion, the pro-life planks thrown out. I mean, I remember Rush Limbaugh listening to Rush as a kid, and he's mocking Roger and Ann Stone on a show playing clips from C-SPAN of them trying to get the life issue out of the party platform. So that's a long-standing fight. The kind of language you're seeing here is pretty common within New York GOP circles. And this strategy just can't possibly win. It couldn't win for McCain or Romney, because it's not like the Democrats were going to be like, rats, curses, foiled again. I guess we won't run $300 million in ads saying they hate women because they took the abortion stuff out of their platform that no one reads. And they've just, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. They have sprung the plot. And now we're cornered. I mean, those ads are running now in swing states, and there's hundreds, millions more coming anyway. On top of this, it really won't work for Trump, because he's got the biggest pro-life scalp in history on his trophy case. That's the appointing the judges to overturn Roe, which he promised to do in 2016 and fulfill. So this idea that you're going to take the shibboleth, their shibboleth of the dam, Roe versus Wade, and you're going to smash it right in their face. And then when you run again, you're going to come back and be like, psych. And they're going to be like, oh, never mind. It's just, well, dumb. I mean, we can debate this theologically. There is no theological debate. And I don't want to hear, don't be a single issue voter. Something tells me that if a political party decided, whatever, fill in your name, we could just kill you whenever we wanted, you turn into a single issue voter real quick. And everybody's a single issue voter. Everybody is. I would imagine you have some non-negotiables. You don't want to vote for a convicted pedophile, a child pornographer, someone who
is incompetent completely. Incompetent completely. You know, has dementia. Yes. Maybe.
Yeah. Or you know, they have as their life verse, there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. Okay. I'm guessing everybody has some line they don't want to cross. So everyone is a single issue voter. So principally, this makes no sense. But a lot of people today on our side are going to point that out. But politically, it's dumb. Now, I think it may not even matter in this election, given what is going on now. What happened in the last debate is everything that we've all known and discussed freely on our side is now out in the water table, and they can't reel it back in. And it's not like, you know, this is Fetterman with a head injury, or I think a vax injury, and eventually those symptoms will subside. He's still a relatively young man. This is a man who's 82 years old. Dementia symptoms only escalate and do not subside, which is why he's not appeared well in all of his attempts to try to put this down since the debate. So, I mean, I think they're losing. I mean, at this point, I think we could run the paper towel rack in my kitchen I'm looking at and win 30 plus states. Okay. And if you can't beat, I'll just say this point blank, get the blank out of here. And every last one of you, and we're excommunicating you all November the 6th, and we're naming every name. That's my position on it. Okay. So I think this election is over as of June 27th, that it ended, if he is their nominee. I don't think they can win. And they know that. And that's why they're acting this way to try to get rid of him. But moving forward, this strategy, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I saw it during the caucus cycle. It didn't make any sense. And so I think we have to come to the conclusion that this is also what Trump and a lot of these people actually believe. And
yes.
And I think that it's because strategically it won't save them, Jenna, from the onslaught coming their way whatsoever. It's the other side's signature issue. He ended Roe v. Wade, which was their, shibboleth of the damned. So I think we have to come to the conclusion that when, as they're trying to reshape the party moving forward, this isn't just we're doing everything we can to win right now, and then, you know, we got to say what we got to say to win, and then once we win, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I think this is what they really think and want, and this is what they're trying to shape for the future. And what you saw over the weekend with J.D. Vance, I mean, this the Bible, you know, when Jesus says, what does it gain a person to gain the whole world but lose their eternal soul in the process? This guy's on Fox News talking about his Hindu wife encouraging him to seek out his Christian faith. Then he turns right around days later, goes on Meet the Press, and says, hey, that drug made by the same German company that came up with Zyklon B that is responsible for 2/3 of all the baby murders in America, I'm totally down with that, man. Let's let it roll. I mean, that stuff is just beyond soulless, frankly. And I can promise you, I mean, the Democratic Party is a demonic construct. I 100% believe that. And it's because I believe that I can promise you what's going on right now with J.D. Vance. I went up against Marco Rubio every day on the campaign trail for Ted Cruz in 2016. He was the most aggressive pro-life messaging candidate in that cycle. And now he's like, yeah, take that stuff out of the platform. I can promise you, up against true, even though it's dark, true spiritual conviction, even though it's coming from a place of darkness on the other side, what you're seeing from the likes of Vance and Rubio to curry the good graces of Trump instead of fear God has no chance in this war, none at all.
And so well said. I mean, this is why we have to be principled and stand for truth. And the way that they are trying to sell this is, well, if we don't water this down, then we will never win. And this is our strategy. I think that this is actually what the majority of the Republican Party at this juncture in 2024, and maybe even earlier, but what they actually want. Because you're right, Steve, to go into the history of saying that this has been tried before. This isn't just Donald Trump's platform that, and we all know that he is the broker, he's the art of the deal. And in 2016, it worked for him to get into power, to be ardently pro-life. And so he promised that and he delivered it. Now, if it works for him to be ardently pro-choice, he'll do it because he is willing to broker those deals. And I personally, having worked for him, and I think that I have also, I mean, I was once kind of a true believer of saying, okay, I think he's really doing good. But at the same time, seeing a lot of those other deals that he was willing to make, ultimately, it's all about power. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing between Trump and even people like Rubio, and then people like J.D. Vance, who clearly have always just been, you know, this waffling sort of unprincipled person. He's willing to change his stance on anything on any given day, whether it benefits him politically and media optically, and now pushing for the vice presidency. But I think overall, this strategy is not about winning elections. It's about transforming the Republican Party into being just a little bit less bad than Republicans, because we are now a godless conservatism as a as an overall society. They want to take the morality out of politics. They want the Republican Party, to be godless.
I think that's how we would define it. I think if we put the Wonder Woman lasso of truth around them, I think their worldviews aren't capable of seeing it that way. I mean, if you don't have the Holy Spirit active in your life, you just can't see the kinds of things you and I are talking about. It's just not possible, okay? So I think if we put the Wonder Woman lasso of truth around them, I think what they would actually say is it's the Republican Party has all these disparate factions that do not fundamentally agree. And therefore, we cannot be an ideologically based party. When you and I were growing up, if you asked someone why you're a Democrat, they'd say, I'm gay, I'm black, I'm a single mom, I'm a teacher. They'd give you an identity. You ask somebody, why are you Republican? I'm pro-life, I'm pro-national defense, pro-limited government. They'd give you a value, okay? And now what they would say is these disparate factions on the right cannot govern. They're too ideologically separated, which is true. That's why we fail whenever we're in majorities. But that's why we need to now be a coalition party of identities like the Democrats are. And in that case, Trump will be king. And kings like to pass along their legacies, okay? Kings like to have heirs. You know, one thing, if you've ever been to and seen the Manhattan skyline for yourself, Donald Trump likes to leave a legacy, okay? And so this is what kings do. And so kings close ranks. Kings set up heirs and legacies beyond, you know, the family can no longer return to the business dealings it did before, unfortunately, because of what the partisans on the other side have done to them and the lawfare they faced. Politics will be the family business for the foreseeable future, long after Donald Trump is gone. And so this is an opportunity to permanently reshape the party into basically a franchise of Trump Inc. That's what they would tell you if you put the Wonder Woman lasso of truth around them. They are trying to do, all right, is to turn the Republican Party, instead of an ideologically based party, into basically a feudal party. And the Trump team brand, even if they're not the office holders, they're the gatekeepers. You can't get anywhere without their endorsements. You got to play ball with them. That's the new family business. That's what they're trying to set up. Now, you and I, because we have the Holy Spirit, can see more broadly beyond that, you know, and kingdoms fall. There's only one permanent kingdom, Jesus. Okay. So we can see the spiritual realities of what will result in what they're trying to accomplish that they cannot see. But I think what they're trying to accomplish, frankly, is just what kings have always tried to accomplish on this earth.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And we're seeing that they are trying to be the gatekeepers, as you suggest, when the RNC is now trading Lila Rose for Amber Rose, from the right to life to the pro-abortion, wow, you know, slut walk, yeah, person, which that and that's literally what she says. That was Amber Rose's organization is called pro-abortion, and it's called the Slut Walk, which is very vulgar, I know, but that's what it's called. And she is now speaking, confirmed as a speaker at the RNC, and yet we are being told, well, too bad, overlook that, because this is still the lesser of the two evils. At what point do we say they're both evil?
I think we are, as the culture gets more and more godless without revival, we're all going to be asking ourselves those kinds of questions all the time. And I think these kinds of situations, we're in a pagan post-Christian culture now, where we're going to debate things like meat sacrifice to idols and whether we should take part in those instances or not. And in that kind of place, you know, Paul says to give maximum grace to one another where that is concerned, that someone's conscience is going to say, I just can't go there. I can't do that. I came out of that. Similar to what you said. Hey, I came out of Trump world. I can't go back to it. We should give you grace. Others are going to say, I don't think there's any power there. It's just a meal, and I'm going to go and find. You can do that too. Just whatever you do, don't cause the lesser brother to stumble. Don't cause someone else's conscience to suffer. And I think that as we grow more and more godless as a culture without revival, we're going to have to learn what previous generations of Christians, every generation of Christians, really, until the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock and founded this country, all had to learn what it meant to live in a negative world. In this country, we've never had to do this before because it was a country established by our own worldview. But now we are in a negative world. We're in a post-Christian world, and we're all going to face these kinds of situations. And I think it's very important we do not turn on one another. But we have to understand that the reason we're in this situation is because of the influences we are facing outside, not inside. And this is going to be a time, I think, for us to give more grace to one another than ever before, because consciences are going to differ on what to do moving forward.
And that is a really wise admonition, Steve Dace, because there are a lot of people who are questioning now, and I've even gotten emails from a lot of listeners and responses on social media saying, well, what now? I mean, you know, can a Christian vote for Trump or vote for this platform, or my conscience won't allow me to do this? And well, you know, my conscience won't allow me not to vote for the Republican platform because I'm so concerned about another 4 years of the Democrats. And so there will be a difference of opinion. This does come down to a wisdom issue of the best way that we can discharge our duty as good citizens living in a very broken society that clearly is more and more godless. We do need to give each other grace. We do need to discuss these things, though, and have these conversations, which is why I appreciate people like Steve Dace, who are solidly rock-ribbed, not just conservative, but Christian. We want to follow the Lord at every turn. So we need to have these conversations so that we can each decide what is best. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.